All right, I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Natalia.
And this is Till Death Do Us Part.
Here we are in the freezing cold.
This morning, Josh got the car stuck in the parking lot and we're waiting to have it dug out. So that's how our day is going so far.
Okay.
I was looking at the Yahoo News and I actually had to ask because I've heard this term before, but I never knew what it meant. So I'm going to ask you, do you know what a 3-alarm fire is?
Okay. I assume that different alarms mean how severe it is. Mm-hmm. And that a 3-alarm would be a not so serious fire. I'm just guessing. I don't really know.
It's kind of what I thought too. So apparently it just means it was a big fire and they probably had 3 trucks respond to it or 3 engines respond to it.
That's all right.
I thought it meant a certain type of alarm.
Why not?
But the whole reason I'm asking is because the article in New York, in Brooklyn, they had a massive warehouse fire and tons of police department evidence gathered like over decades is now gone. It doesn't say how the fire was started, but I'm just questioning the significance of it all because there's, I guess in the area, there's just soggy boxes and like clothes, underwear, shirts, like vials of stuff just completely soaked in that whole area. But yeah, it doesn't say how that fire was started.
That sounds awfully convenient, especially for it to happen now when it's super cold. I would think that somebody would have to intentionally start that. I would wonder, is that, it does sound a little fishy. Is that like a manned building? Are there people in that building watching it? Or is it just like a warehouse that they just go and dump things in?
It's a giant, like, police department warehouse, and they had like cars, everything from cars to a paperclip. And it just seems,
sounds fishy.
Doesn't that sound weird? Like,
sounds like somebody wanted to get rid of something.
Probably the Long Island serial killer or something. Something messed up like that.
Or somebody in the police department. I hate to say it, but if you don't want tampered evidence or, you know, something that's been tampered with to come up in court, because those bags are not supposed to be tampered with. A fire's a great way to get rid of just everything. Because when that comes back as, oh, we've misplaced the evidence, you know, how many times have we heard in these stories that we research that, oh, the evidence burned up right here. They're going to come back and say, sorry, we lost it in the fire. This is the fire.
I mean, it sounds like it shouldn't happen in this day and age. Like, shouldn't it be a little bit more secure? I don't know.
Shouldn't it all be in some kind of fireproofed? I don't know.
It should be in the cloud.
I don't know how you're going to put a car in the cloud, Steph. But
you wouldn't download a car, would you?
I guess that all that evidence, what are you going to do? The budget's not going to allow for them to put it, I guess, anywhere more fireproof than a warehouse. But that's a shame. That sounds like a lot of evidence.
That depend on it? Oh my gosh.
And kind of sounds like it should be more than a 3-alarm.
Right?
Sounds like it should be really important.
It sounds like it should be a priority. I mean, it made it to the New York Times, but I can't believe that. I mean, it just sounds like, oh, there was a fire. They responded to it. Evidence was strewn everywhere and is soggy in sewage water.
Nope. Definitely sounds like that should have been top priority to get that fire put out. How many thousands of cases are now ruined for both sides, right? For if you're the victim and you're trying to pin someone and now that evidence is gone, bad. Mm-hmm. If you're the defendant and you're trying to prove you're innocent, that evidence is gone. So either way, you're screwed on just so many levels in hundreds or thousands of cases. I can't even imagine how many people are going to be upset by this and might not know it for a long time until you apply to get your evidence and that letter comes back to your desk saying, sorry, the evidence is missing.
Yeah, they said it's decades old from murders to cold cases. So someone somewhere probably didn't want their DNA tested because they can track it now.
It's gone. Adios. Well, that's It's awful.
It's crazy. Yeah, I thought I just had to share that. And then I have a show, a snow day show for anyone who's stuck in the weather on Hulu. Kindred, have you heard of this show?
No.
It's really good. You know those recommended for you? You watch this, you might like this type thing. And I always hate looking at those because I'm like, you don't know me. You don't know anything but they do. About me. They do.
They do.
It's really good. It's about this woman. She sells her house or that was left to her in New York, moves to LA. And when she gets there, she starts having these like flashbacks, but they're real. And she's going back in time to 1815. And she's African American and she's waking up on a slave plantation. And she has to figure out why she keeps going back and forth. And it's really good. It's really interesting.
Wow. That sounds interesting. I'm definitely going to look at that. I was hit with something very bizarre that was in the news.
What?
On NPR, they were talking about the number of guinea pigs that were being turned in now at the end of the year. All these unwanted guinea pigs, like pet guinea pigs.
Really?
That, yeah. People were bringing back saying that they didn't want. They were like dumping at the shelter. Hundreds, like 800 guinea pigs.
I didn't know you could dump a guinea pig.
I guess it's like any other pet, right?
Yeah.
Why? Would I never thought that? About it either. Well, I guess you bring it home. It's way too much work than you thought it would be. And you want to get a bit up, you know? So you go and you dump it at the shelter. So what they do with these guinea pigs, right? They don't euthanize them. What they do, supposedly, allegedly, ship them to Colombia to be eaten.
No, no, thank you. I don't
know. The news, me neither. Do not like. No bueno. They were saying that guinea pigs are a delicacy in Colombia. No. Okay, so you know how I will stand up and speak for all Colombians? I'm gonna take my privilege right now. I immediately started texting everyone I knew, all my family members. Have you ever eaten a guinea pig? Have you ever seen guinea pig listed on a menu at a restaurant, sold on the streets, sold, you know, at a food truck, anything?
Like a vendor.
You know, because I was never told and never brought up. This was not like, oh, here's a dish, a traditional Colombian dish of guinea pig. No, never.
Do you know what? Are guinea pigs in the wild? I've never seen like a herd of guinea pigs. Like a pod of guinea pigs like galloping, frolicking.
I love how you think they're a pod and not solitary.
What do you call a group of guinea pigs? Someone should let us know. That would be fantastic.
Please, somebody's got to go to our Instagram or on the Facebook group and tell us. I bet it's something hilarious because you know what they call a group of giraffes?
What?
They call them a tower.
Really? I feel like that's racist or something.
And they call a group of hippos is a float.
Oh my gosh. I did not know this.
I think it's funny. Lots of animals have funny names for their groups or their babies. So I would love it if a group of guinea pigs has a funny name. That would be hilarious. But no, I did not grow up eating a traditional guinea pig dish. I absolutely... They were like, yes, this is a traditional Colombian delicacy. And every single person I spoke to was like, I've never heard of this. I've never seen this.
It's all a lie.
We don't eat furry things. That's that. I do have a little shout out regarding, I followed up on the gravy fountain.
You did? That was one of my hashtags on the post yesterday.
Yes, but I still have not gotten anyone who's actually seen a real gravy fountain. Shout out to my good friend, Barry. Barry was someone who listened to the podcast for a very long time. So he listened to the podcast even in its first reincarnation, in its original form. Wow. So he's the OG. So hi, Barry. He says he has also never heard of a gravy fountain. And Barry's been to many, many a fancy event. So if he's never seen a gravy fountain, I kind of feel like this is a rumor.
We just need to invent it, is what is happening.
Speaking about world sports, we were discussing the World Cup at lunch the other day. And my daughter was asking, you know, what's the big deal about the World Cup? And I was trying to explain to her, I said, you know, it's really the only sport that is played around the entire world, like singularly, every country or almost every country participating in this one sport. Because I was trying to think, and she was like, what about like basketball or swimming? And I'm like, there's really like no other than like the Olympics, which is a mixture of sports. It's not one sport. Like there's no other sport that everybody else gets into.
In the whole world. Yeah.
I'm like, there's nothing.
It's not baseball, I mean, or cricket.
It's
or-
not. And I'm like, even tennis is not every country.
I was just going to say tennis, but no, not really. That's kind of like...
It's only a little part of the world. Yep. Yeah. Even cycling, it's like these mini, you know, I have that Tour de France, but it's like these little... the World Cup is really the only sport that everybody will do. I was like, that's really humongous. And then Ethan was like, you know, the next World Cup is being hosted in the U.S.
Is it really?
Do they know? I got so excited. Oh, so 16 cities.
Oh my God. Okay.
Yes. And it's actually not just the US, it's actually North America. So it's going to be in two or three cities in Mexico and two cities in Canada. Most of it's going to be in the US. Got super excited.
That's so cool.
Super excited.
Really had anything since like the Atlanta Olympics, really? Right?
Yes. Yes. Which I was in Atlanta for. And, you know, we had the bombing, which ruined that shit. However,
that's messed up.
That was the last time we had, like, a big celebration. So that's going to be huge. I was really excited about that. I got really, really excited. So that's going to be awesome. And it's I looked it up. It's going to be everywhere. Basically, anywhere you live in the U.S., you'll be close enough to a game that you could drive a few hours and get to one if you can get tickets. I can't even imagine what a ticket to a game would cost. Probably I'll have to save up for 4 years to buy a ticket.
I was just going to say, it's probably like going to be insane. All the hooligans.
Thousands.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh. Thousands of Somalians to get a ticket. For one ticket. Today, I decided we would go back to Japan. So I hope that our listeners enjoy sushi and the jet lag. We're going back to Tokyo.
All right.
I have my sources. Yeah. Get out those passports. Sources this week from, as usual, Wikipedia. Also, New York Times, Forbes, BBC News, and the Japan Times. We're going to list all of them in the show notes. I do find it interesting how often we go back to Japan.
I do too.
I'm going to tell you, I feel like this is because Japan is a first world country that is very similar. Although on the surface, we have a lot of cultural differences. Mm-hmm. I do feel that as first world countries, that Japan and the U.S. are very similar in how we interact among ourselves and how we interact outside with other countries. I just feel like we have similar personas underneath the food and music and historical background. I feel this day and age, we are very similar as first world countries, but we're going to get into that later when we get to the end. I'm going to come back to that. Today, we're going to go shopping at the Akihabara Shopping Quarter. The shopping center was established in 1890 when the Akihabara Railway Station was built, and the market naturally sprang up. After the 1930s, the market changed from traditional produce and local goods to a future-oriented market, meaning that instead of specializing in food and traditional goods, it went into household electronics, such as washing machines, stereos, refrigerators, and TVs. The market then got a nickname, Electric Town. After the 1980s, the image of the shopping center shifted again, this time to computers. In the early 80s, computers were only being used by hobbyists, aka computer nerds. And before anybody comes for me, that is the exact term that Wikipedia used.
Amazing.
And I would like to point out that I am a self-appointed nerd, proudly.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
It is not a badge of shame. Nerds are smart. And surprise, a lot of us are hot. Okay.
I love it. Yeah, I remember when it was like trendy to be nerdy, like in high school and stuff, and everyone loved the nerdy kid or like the nerdy boys because they had glasses and like vintage t-shirts. I think they're still adorable.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Guys with glasses have a special place in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
So in Japan, computer nerds are known as otaku. Oh, and before I go further, my apologies if I mispronounce or stress whatever part of the word is not supposed to be stressed. Everybody knows that Stephanie and I don't speak any other languages other than stupid. So apologies now. Yes. So today, in its present reincarnation, the Akihabara shopping quarter is known worldwide as the center for this otaku culture. Some otaku even consider Akihabara a sacred place, and they have shrines there. It's a major hub for anime and manga and other computer gamers. Freelance anime artists showcase their work, manga fangs will go there to meet celebrity creators, and even the architects design the buildings to, quote, reflect the general desire of many otaku to live in their anime worlds rather than display their interests to the world at large. I use this quote because I want all of us to remember this idea later, that the otaku themselves, these computer nerds, want to hide from the world. And this idea that as gamers and people who go into the internet want to immerse themselves. And this mentality plays into the complications we're going to see later. So it was a beautiful Sunday on June 8th, 2008, around lunchtime, and the market was bustling with shoppers. Akihabara is closed to vehicular traffic on Sundays, so the streets were brimming with people that day in Tokyo. It was then that a 2-ton rental truck barreled into a crowd of people, hitting 5 and killing 2 of them on the spot. The screaming began, and people ran everywhere. Bystanders rushed in to help the injured. Did the driver have a seizure, perhaps, and lose control of the truck?
Yeah.
He had, after all, blown through a red light and into the crowded marketplace. Store owners started to call for the ambulance, and someone said maybe the driver would also need medical attention. Wow. However, the driver, Tomohiro Kato, didn't need an ambulance. He calmly opened the driver's side door of the rental truck, climbed down, and began plunging a knife into any person within his reach, including the helpers who had rushed in to assist those who had been hit by the truck.
Oh my God. What a nightmare.
Wearing a white suit that quickly became splattered with blood, the killer stumbled and roared as he stabbed 12 people before an officer finally subdued him by threatening to shoot him, at which point Kato dropped his weapon and then backup arrived on the scene to arrest him. The truck had hit Akihabara Market at 12:33 p.m., and the whole thing was over by 12:36.
Oh my God.
Within 3 minutes, 7 people were dead without any explanation other than the one sentence that the 25-year-old Tomohiro Kato told police. "I came to Akihabara to kill people. It didn't matter who I killed." Let's dive in.
Yeah. Okay. I have so many questions. Go. Just tell me everything.
Tomohiro Kato was born on September 28th, 1982. A Libra and a millennial, which, no offense, but I don't mess with Libra men, so straight off the bat, I'm raising an eyebrow. Add to the fact that he was born into a wealthy family. His father was a top manager at a financial company, and he grew up in a very nice area. All through grade school and high school, he earned top grades. He was a star track athlete and the president of the tennis club. He appeared well-adjusted. Although, we've said many times on the show, you can't really know what someone's life is like behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. His brother later said in interviews that both his parents placed immense pressure on the kids to get perfect grades, and they would be punished severely if they didn't perform to their high expectations. Unfortunately, his brother killed himself in 2014, allegedly due to the shame he carried over what his brother had done. There have been rumors that the parents made Tomohiro eat scraps when he did poorly in school, or that they made him stand in the snow without any shoes or jackets when he didn't perform and achieve very high marks. As a side note, his parents did go on TV and make a public apology to the victims' families about what happened. In the end, he failed his college entrance exams. I don't know if he did this on purpose as a rebellion, or if he simply didn't make it from the crushing weight of his parents' pressure. But either way, he blanked. And it seemed that this is the turning point. Not making it into university changed his entire persona. He went down this dark rabbit hole of loneliness and depression. He became a mechanic, but I feel like he thought of himself as a loser. Maybe his parents were also reinforcing this idea, but certainly he brought this mentality of, "I'm not good enough. This isn't a successful life. Nobody will ever really want me. This life is pointless." He rarely went home, and when he did, he had violent outbursts. He also was very angry at his place of work. He vocalized a paranoia that he would be fired all the time. He complained about this in online forums. He vented a lot, this inner turmoil, online. He felt that this was his only place that he could be safe, is online, on the internet. Looking back, it's easy to see that his mental health deteriorated so much, even at this point. He attempted suicide in 2006 by ramming his car into a cement wall. His parents should have put him in some kind of inpatient therapy. But if I had to take a guess.
Yeah, this reminds me of Tsutomu, the vampire guy. It was like his parents should have put him in therapy or something because they were wealthy. And for some reason, things just weren't working out for him. It's like, I wonder if it's a pattern in Japan. I don't know.
Yeah, we're going to get into it. I mean, I think a lot of us have heard the term tiger mom and how that's tied into the Asian culture, not just Asian Japan, Asian China, but even India and other Eastern countries. And I don't think that it's only in those countries. I think we see this in other countries. We see that here in America. I don't think it's just moms either. I think that equally both parents can put pressure on children in a way that breaks them, whether it's to be a star athlete or to be an overachieving student. And this pressure breaks them.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking his parents knew he needed help. But if you're putting so much pressure that you're making your child eat scraps when they bring home a B in math, you're going to be too embarrassed to bring your child to a mental hospital and let people see that.
Yeah, that's a tough dynamic. That's really hard.
Tomohiro completed technical school and became a mechanic, which I want to say there's nothing shameful about this. The world cannot function without mechanics or plumbers or electricians. And I think it's wrong how we make kids think that the only acceptable or successful careers are those with master's degrees or PhDs.
Yeah.
Not everyone is made to be a doctor or a banker. And these are not the only occupations that we need to keep the world running. And they're not the only careers that make money. Some of the people I know who are extremely wealthy and ready to retire far earlier than their 60s are people who became plumbers, got excellent jobs, have excellent pensions, and are now retiring, looking at their retirement, and they are happy. They're retiring before 65. They have beautiful houses and they did very well for themselves. They did not go and get masters. They did not go and get PhDs. Just saying. Mm-hmm. That's not the only thing that's out there in this world, but they are of a different generation. It was back when we didn't tell kids that that's what they needed to do.
Yeah.
I really believe that classes like woodworking and shop should still be mandated in high schools. And we should be exposing our children to the basic skills they need. Not just so that they see what other careers are out there, but so that they can repair their own homes and cars in a basic way. So that they can do for themselves. Because we didn't get, I mean, I know I didn't get that. I think our generation is where that started, when they started taking that out of schools and just started pushing so much for us to just get reading and math.
I did get home ec, and it was like boys got wood chop and girls got home ec, and then we switched. I don't know why it was a boy-girl thing, but I would have loved to take a mechanics class in high school so I know how to check my tires and my oil and stuff like that. That would have been amazing.
I feel like some of us, like the older millennials, saw that, but it started to phase out then. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us didn't get it at all. And yes, it was split with, you know, the boys doing the quote boy stuff with the metal and the wood and the girls getting the home ec. But even that has gone out the window. They don't get any of that now unless they take it as a club or they choose to take that as an elective. And they're so pressured now to get all of this math and science and like literary, like the reading, the English on their resumes for colleges, that they're booking their time with those classes. They're not taking cooking. They're not taking the woodworking classes. They're not doing that. They're taking the science and the math. They're taking the English. You know what I mean? So when I'm in a certain mood, I apologize now. You can put your tin hat on. I almost feel like there is this conspiracy because our government wants us to rely on goods and services to keep us from being independent so that we spend our money instead of letting us repair our own homes and repair our own cars so that we will buy and pay for things instead of doing it ourselves.
It is a legitimate marketing model, especially for appliances, I would say.
I kind of feel like I get a little bit of it sometimes. And I feel like I only get this because Ron shows me and because Ron's so much older than me. But if you didn't have a dad around, like I did, and like I feel a lot of millennials didn't, and you didn't have like a father figure or a mom who was if you didn't have somebody who showed you this, a family member who showed you this, school didn't teach this to you. And so how many of us really grew up learning how to repair like basic appliances, you know, how to like let the water out of things and how to, you know, like simple things that we should know. And instead we have to call somebody. And maybe now with YouTube and TikTok, if you want, you can go online and watch a video and then maybe go to the store, buy all the pieces and teach yourself how to do something if you are so inclined. But it's really hard in your 30s and 40s to figure that shit out now. It's not the same as if when I was between 12 and 18 and a little sponge, somebody had taught me to do that. Yeah. And I would have saved myself a lot of time and money in my 20s if somebody had taught me how to change my oil and somebody had taught me how to change the filters in my air conditioning and all of that basic shit in my house.
Yeah.
Like we have a very, like, side note, I have a very basic problem right now with like the heating. And I took a look at my boiler and it seems like a really basic problem. And I feel like, ugh, if I could just like figure it out, I could fix this, but I can't. So I have to call a plumber. And I feel like it's a really stupid thing that's going to cost me like $300-$500. And it's going to be like a really stupid switch that I just have to pull on to like release valve or some shit.
Yeah.
And if someone had just taught me the basics, I could do this. But anyway.
I wholeheartedly agree.
Anyway, we can take our tin hats off now. I'm just saying it shouldn't be a shameful thing. However, a lot of people, a lot of children, I would say the majority of kids are coming out of high school with this feeling that if I don't go into college committing to a bachelor's that's going to lead to a master's in finance, in the medical field, in this office job, in this white collar world, then I'm a failure. I'm a loser. And it shouldn't be that way. And that is not to excuse what he did, but I'm just explaining the circumstances. This is where his depression was leading to. Tomohiro felt like a loser. He felt like he was a shameful person in his society. And I think that that is sort of where I'm saying that Japan and America is this similar underneath the food and the religion and all this other stuff. It's very similar in how we are with our society. Anyway, back to this very depressing reality. Tomohiro spiraled in his early adulthood into isolation. And it's not a stretch to say that millennials, our generation in particular, found ourselves lonely in a way that was not seen before in human history. Because we found ourselves lonely, but we didn't turn to social clubs or sports teams or even traditional dating as a way to alleviate this sadness. We turned to the internet. And this is why I said to put a pin in this idea of the otaku from before. The idea that evolved, that we become so enmeshed in the internet that some of us, many, many of us, prefer to live in this projected fantasy space instead of our real lives. And for some of us, that becomes a safe space or an enriching space, I suppose, although ultimately I have a hard time accepting it as equal to real human contact or actual human connection. And the darker side of it is that for many people, it's an excellent place to run to with secrets. And it doesn't have a happy ending. Or it doesn't feel like there's any ending. It's this black space without boundaries. It's this just endless pit with no boundaries at all. There's no light at the end of the tunnel. There's no meetup. There's no date set up. There's just nothing. And it leads to what Japan came up with a term called kireru. And it's specifically alienated youth that commit acts of violence. Wow. So get this. In Japan, more than 500,000 people under 40 haven't left their house in 6 months to interact with another human.
Wait, what? Really?
Yes. 500,000 people our age haven't left their house in 6 months. And this is post-COVID. So the restrictions lifted. But the internet has allowed us to get everything to our door. We don't have to leave for food. We don't have to leave for work. We can work from home. We can speak to family from home and get everything we need. We think we can get everything we need right here in our own space. And that's just something we did not see ever before now with the internet. And our brains just aren't built this way. Psychologically speaking, developmentally speaking, from an evolutionary standpoint, a psychological standpoint, this was not what we were meant for. This has gone too quickly. Our brains have not adapted to this. We think we're smart enough. We want to think we're smart enough. But our technology has jumped within a century to a place that we were not meant to be.
Yeah, I wonder. That's like the babies that they were finding that were being up for adoption. They were like orphans, and they would rock themselves in their crib because they had no physical contact. Like, people need human touch, and like they would get sick because they didn't have anyone holding them or just interaction with other people. That's a serious thing.
Yes. And study after study has shown how this isolation leads to chronic physical illness and mental illness. And we still aren't grasping this, but we are creatures that don't learn very quickly. Sort of how we see that we're melting the earth, but we refuse to do anything about it. We just bury our heads in the sand and move forward.
Yeah.
So the Forbes article I was reading said that a 2016 study showed that millennials not only placed being alone as a greater fear than losing their job or their home, but a full 42% said that they feared ending up alone more than they feared getting cancer.
Really?
That they were more afraid that they would end up alone in life than getting cancer. And it was the highest percentage out of every group that they surveyed. And yet, we do it to ourselves.
I find that astonishing. I mean, I believe it. It's insane to me, though.
Right? Fascinating, but in the darkest way. Anyway, Tomohiro posted in online forums about his loneliness in the months leading up to the attack. He wrote things such as, "I don't have a single friend. I won't have one in the future. And I'm lower than trash because trash gets recycled."
That's so again, sad.
It is. I'm not excusing this man's actions. That's not something we do on the podcast. We've talked about this before. Many, if not most, criminals that we examine have some kind of traumatic upbringing or background that leads them to what they do. But I did feel sorry for him. And on the scale of truly evil, I'm planning to torture and kill people, down to the insane, I don't even know what I'm doing, crazy killer, I think Tomohiro falls in between. He made terrible choices after feeling something I think many of us have felt, except to the extreme. He did post online that he was going to attack people, but he didn't do it till the very end, on the day of the attack. There was no time to stop him. And what he did is unforgivable. The victims and their families, I completely understand, don't have to feel sympathy for someone who chooses to hurt others instead of seeking help for their emotional distress. I understand that. If I was a family member or a friend of one of these victims, I would absolutely take that stand as well. I see both sides.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't a lot to say about what happened directly after the incident at the shopping quarter. Tomohiro was arrested. He was immediately charged and found guilty right after the attack. What is disturbing is that two people were live streaming the attack. I don't even know what to say about this, since we talked at length about watching other people suffer when you covered your story.
Yeah.
Which was in that region. But this exists everywhere when people live stream crimes, when people live stream fights on like WorldStar and other platforms that people watch, you know, fights and crimes happening and people just watch it online. I don't know how you stomach that because I'm not that person, but it seems like it's very popular and people do it. I don't know why. I don't know how we've gotten to this place where we can just watch something and continue to watch it and can't look away.
Yeah. It's different. I don't know how to put it into words other than it's messed up, but that doesn't do it justice.
Yeah. And I understand people are going to say, well, you know, it was only 3 minutes and the people who are watching it would never have had time to call the cops. And I hear you, but like 3,000 people were watching. Why? Why? It just seems so sick.
It does.
Anyway, so he was sentenced to death in 2011. What I did find interesting is how the rest of the world reports on the death penalty. Mm-hmm. You know, we think of ourselves as this very advanced country. And admittedly, I think of Japan as a very advanced country. However, the BBC article that I read really made me take a step back. It humbled me and made me think, yeah, for a first world country, we're pretty barbaric.
Yeah. I hear it.
The BBC.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not the first time. It's not the only time. It's not even the, like, it happens a lot. But it's just, it's like, it's, you know, it happens a little too much lately. Mm-hmm. That happens more and more that it feels like we should be catching up. And we're not.
Yeah.
The BBC reported, quote, Japan remains one of the few developed countries that still uses the death penalty. And I thought, ouch. Us too, huh?
Yeah.
Ouch. Because we're one of those two, huh? We're one of the few.
We are.
Tomohiro Kato was hanged this year on July 16th, 2022. I was reminded when I did this research that Japanese prisoners are only informed that they will be killed on the day that it will happen, which their government says is to save them from the mental anguish. But to me, this seems worse. They actually have inmates suing now, saying that this is cruel and that it promotes further anxiety. And I get that.
Yeah, that's, it's so messed up. We learned about that a while ago, and I don't know how I feel about it because it's the only time I ever heard about it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it is messed up. They probably should sue, but I don't know. I don't think it will work just because convincing the Japanese government on something like that, I don't think they would budge.
No, I don't think they're going to win. I think if anything, they did it just so that people hear them, to maybe get other people to, you know what I mean? Like waving their hands in the air, like, hey, can everybody remember what's going on here for a minute?
Yeah.
It does seem cruel though.
It does.
That you just never know what day it's going to be until you that minute where somebody comes and knocks on your cell and says, hey, by the way, it's going to happen in a few hours. It seems really messed up.
It's worse. You're constantly waiting for the other shoe to drop.
I would not be able to sleep.
Uh-uh. Every time you hear a knock on your door or whatever, every morning or whatever the case is, that's what you're probably thinking about. Like, that's more mental anguish than the alternative.
I feel like it would be worse than the countdown.
Yeah.
Anyway, before we wrap up, I want to read the list of victims. We want to just remind people that even when it's random, victims are not forgotten. I did try to find out some things. Again, it makes me sad when we try to find out stuff about victims and there's so little that's mentioned about people, especially when it's in groups and there's hardly anything there. Even when I tried to Google them individually, that there's so little there to go on. So for some of them, I don't have anything, but I did what I could. So we have Kazunori Fujino, 19, and his friend Takahiro Kamaguchi, also 19. They were two friends, students in college, who loved to play video games together. There was also an older gentleman, 74, Katsuhiko Nakamura. There was also Naoki Miyamoto, 31. He played baseball and founded his own computer company. His friend gave a speech on the anniversary of the attack and laid flowers still in the marketplace. There was also Mitsuro Matsuri, 33. He was a licensed cook. There was also Kazuhiro Koiwa, 47. And the only female, Maimuto, and she was in her fourth year at university. She was 21. And that was the 2008 Akihabara massacre in Tokyo.
That is crazy. I like that you recognized everyone at the end. There was a similar situation in Waukesha, Wisconsin, something where it was that Christmas Day parade and someone drove right into the crowd and they didn't, I don't remember hearing anything about the victims either. And so I'm glad you did that.
Thanks. Yeah, I feel like they get lost. They get lost so easily. We hear the focus on the victims, maybe when it's a serial killer or, you know, when it's a cold case, when it makes the story sexy. They get lost when it's a group. Mm-hmm. And I felt bad. And so I tried my best.
Good job.
So
snaps. Snaps all around.
Thank you. But yeah, that wraps us up for this week. Just want to remind people that yes, the internet is an amazing thing and we all use it all the time and we can't get away from it. I don't want to hear from anybody talking about how, you know, we should not have phones or we should just get rid of phones and go back to like knitting in the living rooms. It's never going to happen. We can't go backwards. It's a part of us now. However, we should really, really remember that we cannot isolate ourselves. We should not end up like Wall-E. Did you ever see Wall-E?
Yeah, Wall-E.
We're walking around with the screens just in front of us. We really need to get back to also interacting in person.
Yeah.
We should really.
It's important.
In-person communication is so important, guys.
Kids these days, like kids that were born in the pandemic, have no idea how to interact with other people. Like they have no people skills. So get out there, talk to people, go to the place.
We have to, I mean, as parents, we have to push our kids to interact with others.
Yeah.
But then there comes a point where they're on their own. And that's really the point where then we as adults, I think it's easier when you're a kid, right? Because you have to go to school and you're sort of thrown into interacting with others.
Right.
I think it's much, much more difficult once you're an adult because you could absolutely get a job where you're working from home and you can absolutely find justifications for staying at home and how it's safer, both from like a point of view of, well, I'm not getting exposed to germs and illness, valid. From the point of view that I'm safer from other dangerous humans, valid. I'm saving the earth because I'm not using gas. Valid. You can justify all of this. Okay, I hear you. And it's hard. It's hard to put yourself out there and join a group for like a team to play sports. It's hard to go to a meetup. But you should really try. Try to find something you like and try to go. It will be fun. Like when I went to CrimeCon, it was so much fun. You could just have to find something you like and try to meet people. And preferably not somewhere where you're like flying out to Las Vegas. Preferably something in your town where it's like a weekly meeting that you're going to like walk with friends, or a cooking class, or something that you're going to like continually meet people, a book club or whatever. Or even if it's a video game, whatever, where you're like continually meeting with the same people and they're going to get to know you and get to know about you and you about them. So that when you start to feel sad or you're starting to like need an outlet, those people can hear you and you can hear them and you can like form relationships that are more interpersonal, where, okay, even if it's online, it's not just in this empty black hole forum. It's not just this place where you're one in hundreds on Facebook in a fan club or a group that you're just like, just one of a number.
Yeah.
Where people actually know about you and your life and what's the name of your pet, where if you go missing or you're like getting quiet, somebody's going to say, hey, has anyone seen Stephanie lately? Or if you start acting weird, somebody's going to call you out and be like, hey, are you feeling okay? Right?
I will say that it's definitely cozy in the bubble. I think I totally 100% get that, but it's also that can be isolating. And if you taking that first step to do a class, like at Michael's or like a cake decorating class. I did that. I knew nothing about cake decorating, but it was something to do on Wednesday nights. And everyone also had the same apprehensiveness that they're like, well, I'm going to go do this thing and I don't know anybody. So everyone has that same fear. It's not just you. And
yeah.
Everyone's uncomfortable. So that's how you can break the ice too. Like, let's all go do a bunch of stuff that we have no idea what we're doing because everyone's in the same spot and you're not alone. You don't have to be lonely.
That's such a great point.
And if you do put yourself out there, that is the amazing first thing that you did. A round of applause for that. Well, great story. I enjoy going to Japan and enjoy the rest of your day, week, weekend.
You too. Stay warm.
All right. Talk to you later.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. He heard us talking about guinea pigs and he got worried that he was next.
He's on the list.
Don't worry, Goggles. We don't eat cats in Colombia either.
Well, where would you be that would be on the menu, that it's like Goggles a la mode or something?
China.
Oh, yeah.
Right? just saying, don't bring him on vacation there.
Everyone, I wanted to jump on here real quick and let everyone know how they can get a hold of us. Of course, we are on all social media channels. We're on TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. If you want to send us a message, tilldeathdoaspartpodcast@gmail.com. And we're much more active on Instagram, tilldeathdoaspartpodcast. If you have sent us a message and we haven't either responded or heard back from us, do not feel bad. It is not your fault. It's Natalia's fault. And with that being said, definitely like, follow, subscribe, review, share, all those fun things. See you later.